Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for Four Questions, where we look back over the weekend and forward to the week ahead. The four questions, as ever, are: what delighted you over the weekend? What annoyed you over the weekend? What did you learn? And what are you looking forward to? The people here to answer them are Susan Daly and Maya Dunphy. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So, okay, go on then, Susan. Go on about digging up St. Anne's Park. Where is there? This was an archaeological thing.
Yes, and I'm not an archaeologist.
No, but so then why did they let you do it then?
Just, I'm so multi-talented, people can tell when I approach. They're like, let her at it. No, I'm joking. No, it's a brilliant idea, and you'll see this across the country. They're community digs, basically. And so it's where there's, I suppose, a large site. It's very much by local authority, heritage officers on Tashka getting involved. And you get a chance to volunteer on a dig that might happen over a specific period of time, like 2 weeks. And there's a set objective. We want to uncover this part of a site because we don't know this thing about it and we want to prove it. And they allow local people to come in. They give you your trowel. They give you your knee pad. I brought my own as well. Not taking any chances at my age. A pair of gardening gloves. And you get to go and dig in the dirt and you get to find things if you're lucky. But I have an interest in archaeology from when I was a kid. I was that kid keeping lots of sticks and stones in my pocket. Sure, I was going to find a piece of dinosaur. And it's just a dream come true. Like, we were digging in Raheny on St. Anne's Park, right, which is, people will know if they're from Dublin, it's a very large park. And it used to belong to the Guinnesses and they eventually gifted it to the state, I think. And it was much bigger. It was twice the size it is now, but
it's big enough now.
Raheny estates, yeah, were built on it. So really extensive. But I mean, the Guinnesses were fabulously wealthy, as I'm sure heirs of it are now. And in this place, they had a really large mansion. So if you know it, there's a real big drive up to this kind of hump. And that's where the mansion stood. And there's a lot known about that. There's pictures of the interiors and so on. But we excavated part of that last year, just the portico area. It burned down in 1943 by accident, apparently, although it was the one night the caretaker was off, you know. And then it was demolished in 1968 because it was super dangerous. A lot of basements and they kind of piled it all in. But when we were digging there last year, we had loads of local people, older people come past going, I used to play in the ruins here or whatever. And I found lots of bits, pieces, stained glass, pottery last year.
How old would that building have been?
1800s it was renovated, but I think there was something on the site from the 1700s. You know, if you watched the House of Guinness total soap opera on Netflix there last year, it was where one of the bolder boys of the Guinnesses in that show was living with Lady Bantry. If anyone remembers, the horse would be flying out to this mansion by the sea. That represented the St. Anne's mansion or whatever. But this year we were doing a different area, and it was the summer house. And it's called that, but they don't actually know that it was like for leisure, but they only had an outline of it on a map. So it was kind of more mysterious. So we were digging away and there was only a small line of bricks there 2 weeks ago. And now there's like a full massive kitchen range area, fireplace, flagstones. There's much less to find, but it's all the more exciting. So I found a tiny bit of 19th century stoneware, a little bit of black marble, which they have the record of Lord Ardilaun buying for a renovation, but not knowing what happened. It was probably stripped away. Never been happier. I didn't take them home. No.
Empty your pockets.
I think the National Monuments Act, you're not allowed to take any home. No.
What happens to it then?
Well, it's catalogued, right? And it is ultimately put in the National Archive. I mean, I don't know if this one goes to the one on Swords Road. You know what you see in the museums around Dublin and other places in the country? They're a tiny, tiny, tiny proportion of what we have in storage, historical artefacts and so on. So there's these massive warehouses where all these things are catalogued and kept. Now, in some places, they just basically ultimately have to cover them back over. And that's the killer about archaeology. In a way, you're often revealing to cover back. And archaeology in itself is a form of vandalism. You know, you're digging down into a site. So you can maximum only do a site for 5 years. And they did that with the big mansion. They're hoping to come back to the summer house next year. And let's take this as a promotional moment there, Dublin Council, whoever's in charge of it. Oh, my God, I had the best time. And last year they gave me high vis that said archaeologist on the back. And this year they didn't. They just had National Heritage Week and I felt absolutely robbed.
Oh, can anybody apply to take part?
No, Maya, you have to be very special. Okay, yes, you absolutely can. And if you Google it, there's a Gmail for it and you can put yourself on for the waiting list. It's something like St. Anne's Community Dig or something at Gmail. But but double check. And you just put yourself down. So if it comes out next year, that's what happened. I put myself down. I wandered past the year before, was fascinated. There's a table of the finds. They talk to the public. It's an amazing way for Irish people to kind of appreciate the heritage in a real hands-on way and to kind of have a sense of ownership about it. And hopefully there was loads of young people as well. It was so cool. I was so cool for one day, Sean.
Do I get a sense of regret here of the path, not the road not taken for Susan Daly that maybe she had her time all over
you see
again.
A vision for Susan Daly's retirement. Now, I might need bionic knees to get back into that kind of level of down for 6 hours in the dirt. But, you've got to have a passion. You can have a hobby, right?
Yeah.
This is it, and I'm proud of it.
And eventually, when they've run out of time, allocated time to excavate it, will they put up any kind of information plaque or something?
I presume, I don't know if they will in the summer house, because like that area has loads of these kind of sites. In fact, while we were there, I was pulling back one of the railings to give the public more access, because we were digging out more and more of the lintel. And I was like, there's a wall here. And one of the archaeologists came over and went, oh God, yeah, that must be this bit of the shed or whatever. I was like, oh my God, I felt like I found the pyramids. And they were like, Susan's probably in outhouse, relax, calm down. So that's the kind of thing you'll come across there. But like in the countryside where I grew up in Tipperary, very close to an area in County Limerick called Lochgar. And that was a huge Neolithic site. And previous to that, amazing. People couldn't put a house up without finding a megalithic tomb underneath. Mm. So there are parts of the country where this is really rich for us, and we don't associate it with Ireland because we think of great things that are great standing. But there's a lot out there. So look, some people are not interested in this. Yeah, but
up
really
in the Dublin Mountains to Braddon, the walk up there, it's like an open air museum with the Bronze Age tombs and megalithic tombs. It's amazing. It's really interesting.
Yeah. But once it's out there, it's weathering. And that's one of the issues we have with heritage in Ireland, particularly on the coastal areas. There's a lot of it being weathered away. And I mean, you cannot put a roof over Ireland. There's not a lot we can do about it with all the best will and all the biggest budget in the world, except to catalogue it, respect it, not vandalise it. And just appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds actually like a lovely day.
Yeah,
really does.
Lovely.
Really does. So, bees.
Bees. Well, I enthralled you, Sean, not so long ago with tales of discovering new monkeys in Africa.
Yeah.
But for the first time in 26 years, a critically endangered bee has been found in County Offaly. So a couple of weeks ago, and I have to read his title. This man's title is the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan Rare Species Pollinator Officer, Joshua Clark. But what a job. What a job.
A long title.
He found the critically endangered silver-sided nomad bee. I'm so envious. I just want that job. Now, I know we know that there are certain harbingers of doom for human beings. One is, you know, if we don't see enough bees. A bit like if you ever lost your cynicism, Sean, that would be a really bad sign for humanity. Bees are the other one.
Yeah.
But these are nomad bees. So they're parasitic in many ways. So people often say, well, are we better off not having those bees? But actually they are. All these bees are a really good indicator of the health of our environment and the fact that if they lay their eggs in other bees' nests, so other bees have to be prolific for them to be prolific as well. So it's a really good sign that they're starting to do a little bit better. You won't see them in suburban gardens. They like grasslands, heath, kind of coastland dunes.
And had it been assumed it had died out altogether in Ireland?
It hadn't been. It was categorised as critically endangered because you wouldn't see it in suburban gardens, like I say. But it takes people like this amazing job title, Joshua Clark, to go out and actually actively look for it. So it's been 26 years. So yes, it's a...
Where did he find it?
County Offaly.
Yeah, and is there any particular reason why it was in County Offaly? Have they said the hedgerows there being looked after better?
He was looking at a particular kind of shrub, of plant, that kind of grassland, that kind of rough
Offaly
plant.
Offaly is a lot of bogland. No offence to Offaly, but it does. Like, I mean, as in, it's quite biodiverse and so on.
Yeah.
So
you have to actively look for these
kinds of species.
No,
it's not offensive to Offaly.
Well,
it's a fact.
Kind of moggers, you know, let's face it, that's not what Offaly people want to hear.
As we know, the bogs are a rainforest, aren't they?
Correct.
So they're really, really important.
Okay. The remains of our rainforest.
Yes.
Sean, you must be like a career guidance officer here with myself and Maya making
purchases
for our next
the jobs they really want.
I know.
Yes, indeed. So, Maya, you were annoyed about the Friedrich's ataxia drug.
Yes, I mean, it was hard to ignore this, and to see those people take to the streets yesterday was just soul destroying. And was also soul destroying was I mentioned it on social media, usually a big mistake, and I had a lot of people the usual types explain to me how big pharma works and how research and development costs a lot of money. I need to understand this. And of course I understand this. And this particular disease is a very rare one. So obviously it means that, yes, research development costs were very, very high. Also, there isn't a huge population who need it. So usually when that happens, other companies bring out generic brands and they pitch for that license and then prices come down. In this case, obviously, unlike things like maybe HRT or cancer drugs that a lot of people will need, unfortunately, this drug will only be needed by a very small percentage of people. But to me, that makes it even more important that we try and do this, because it's a finite number of people who need this. And I was chatting to Susan outside and we were saying, you know, imagine if I have shivers down my spine thinking about, like, what price do you put on your child's life or your own life? Now, I know this, it's not a cure, but it does dramatically help this slow the horrible condition.
Yeah.
And it is very expensive, but like I said, there's a finite amount of people.
I don't know how much it costs, but it's extraordinarily expensive.
It's about 260,000, I think, per patient. But like I said, there's a definite amount of number of people who need this. And I think we should be
but there are people in the HSE whose job that is to put a price on this, to say, this will use this amount of money for this amount of people for this drug.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that money could go to this other cohort
and
of people.
Know,
and
it's very hard.
That's not an easy decision to make.
It's not, but there are always ways and means. And like I said, I think that the total figure needed to be 130 million. I'm sure Susan could list off things that have cost more than that in the last fortnight alone. Now, the government are meeting tomorrow to discuss it, so we're keeping everything crossed for these people, because it's something that I think is achievable, and not all things in that area
and we
are
have seen
achievable.
It before. Sometimes it requires people to come out and show, like, if you want to get transactional about it, this is what you're saying. My life is worth the quality of life of this child. There's a man who has lost his son, and his other son is gravely ill and has literally said, like, am I not worth it? And, you know, you have to balance the bean counting with the bottom line of what kind of society you want to live in. And we've gone through this a few times with things like hyperemesis that took a while for people to, and at any given time, a lot of women suffer from it, but at any given time, it's only X number, cystic fibrosis, and the drug that massively improved people's outcomes there. We've seen this before as well. Like, the HSE always has an overspend. We never have enough money for the health budget. It is a very difficult job. It wouldn't take the Ministry of Health as a job for the world. I'll keep the archaeology dream alive. You know what I mean? But at the same time, we have to get a little bit better at balancing, not being reactive and making really vulnerable people take to the streets. And sometimes we don't want to give in to the last protest, not looking at any big protests this year in particular. But the fact is, you know, that is kind of sometimes how it works. And sometimes people necessarily do have to shout for people to kind of go, let's see what the balance here is on the bottom line. And I really hope that this is a good resolution tomorrow. And I'm sorry that people have had to get to this point to make people discuss it.
Yeah, certainly. We'll just, I suppose, wait and see. Now, I don't know if you're annoyed by this, more rather puzzled by it, the pair are moving back to the UK, Meghan and Harry.
Meghan and Harry. I put this in a plan B because my point is almost, I'm annoyed that I have to even think about this thing again. Like, I'm working in news, I'm not as much on the front line, so thankfully I don't have to do the same job that some of the reporters do of having to read about and go, oh, hold on, I have to care about this for a minute. And I think that's it. It's just like, why do we get certain obsessions with certain things? Like, Harry and Meghan are not royals anymore either.
They're celebrities.
So they're sort of like, it's not even falling into, all right, I'm going to get energised about this because it's costing the punter in the UK X amount of money to support them. Like, they've been off the honours roll since, what, 2020 or something like that. Meghan's had her go at the lifestyle stuff, the sub Martha Stewart brand or whatever. We did hate watch it, didn't we? We hate watched it a bit.
Well,
but I have no
ludicrous
problem with
it,
the poor
ludicrous
woman. She had a terrible time and she was in the UK. It's just the fact it's popped up again. I wonder, did it come off the back, though, there was a whole privacy thing with the Mail.
Oh, he's got a big bill, $9 million.
Big bill and stuff like that. So maybe there is some news value in going, what are they doing? But it does feel like it's like September almost feels like the silly season now.
Yeah.
Whereas in the past, silly season was August. To me, serious things happen all the time. And then this stuff pops up and you go, okay, maybe this is our distraction these days. We're all into the news avoidance. Maybe this is the stuff that we tell ourselves is news, but actually just allows us for a moment to have a communal conversation that isn't too controversial.
Yeah.
I do wonder as well, because obviously the king does have cancer, and maybe he is more ill. I thought maybe he's more ill than we realise, and maybe he's coming back to spend time with his father. That was where my mind naturally went to. But I mean, I do feel sorry for Meghan. She doesn't always help herself, I have to say. And that show was just extraordinary. The lack of self-awareness was just extraordinary. You knew she had to be exec producing it. Yeah. But I feel like they should just ignore them now. I know you probably can't in
Oh, we can. Yeah, we kind of can. We refuse to use
honorifics
for
something.
But people
you know?
Will lap it up, though. They always do.
Yeah, there's enough people, though, that get annoyed if there's too much of it as well. It just depends,
I suppose. The vitriol towards her is on another
horrific,
level.
Yeah.
Like, there was a poll done, I think, by the Daily Mail, and it was the royals' popularity, included Harry and Meghan. Mm. And Prince Andrew still had a number of people supporting him, and she wasn't far ahead of him. And I thought, that beggars belief.
Yeah.
Beggars belief.
But isn't this like, you know, people go mad watching Love Island every year and they get very exercised about who they like and people they absolutely loathe. And this is just another version of that. It's like they're not real people.
Yeah.
So we can have the most vicious opinions about them or, you know, if people are exercised by this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I
that's how it is when you talk about social media there, Maya, and, you know, people's response to you putting anything out there. Like, I wouldn't be public really at all. And back in the day, like, I actually looked at my ex-Twitter account. I was like, geez, I've still got 20,000 or so on there. And it used to be more. I haven't engaged in years on that. And it's just, it's really impossible. You worry about what you give away. So there's an awful trade-off that I think, you know, they've had her from being a star from when she was quite young and Harry from being part of that circus. That, you know, they've had that trade-off made for them early on. And it's just about the new ways in which you have to engage that celebrity now. And I guess they're just trying to make a living as well. Like, I guess they're a little bit like, what's next? I don't know what their brand is anymore. I think it's a bit confused. And a bit like the Beckhams, that's what they've ended up having to be as a brand.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
God, it's an awful.
Again,
I know, you know,
would be great
wouldn't
for
mind their money
and
all that.
Get out the trowels.
Get out the trowels, guys.
Now, I suppose this relates to a lot of things, Maya, this idea that, you know, we always get to the end of the summer and we think we've wasted it.
Yeah, oh yes, this is, I think most people have heard of SAD, seasonal affective disorder, and we associate it with winter and the lack of daylight and the short days. But actually, it can kick in at this time of year for quite a different reason too. Obviously, we're aware that days are getting shorter as well and autumn is coming. But I've noticed online there's this attitude now that people have of, I didn't spend my summer the right way. I didn't do enough. And even I felt it. I got a text this morning from a good friend who was supposed to have done a beach picnic and something else. And I just didn't get around to doing them. I thought, oh my goodness, have I wasted the entire summer? Now we're going back to school. And then my little boy said to me, my favourite thing actually, Mum, is just relaxing. And I realised that sometimes we put way too much pressure on ourselves to make, especially summer, to make summer perfect and to fill it with all these adventures and things. And it's very hard, especially for parents, especially for working parents, to try and fit it all in. And I do think that actually, and I'm sure Susan's a mum of two, it is great for kids to get up late, just lounge on the couch sometimes, sit out in the balcony or garden and hang out a little bit. So I'm trying to not feel that guilt. But when you're surrounded by the litany of fun things people have been doing, you think, did I do enough? But the answer is always, like, you know, your best is good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, stop. I'm bored.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great learning for you, love. Yeah. You get most of Madge, but no, they'll just moan at you for 6 hours. And it's also to do with working and not working. And like, if you're working outside the home, you guys were talking about that last week, the juggle.
Yeah.
And that's really difficult. Like, in some ways, I welcome the structure. But yeah, like my 11-year-old being getting closer now to sleeping in a bit, whereas the younger one is still like, hello, it's 6:30. What are you guys doing? And you're just like, all right. Now, obviously, we'd our holiday in the middle of that and she was still up at 6:30 and you're like, you know the way mum's on AL annual leave? No, she's not having it, you know.
That's so funny. Well, do you remember a few years ago there was a very senior psychiatrist that came out and said actually being bored is fundamental for children's brains.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And even I only have one, I feel guilty he's playing on his own a lot, but even that, you know, it encourages their imagination and creativity. And we were bored a lot as kids. We didn't have screens. Like, Susan and I were born like in the 1920s, so, you know, it was a long time ago.
Long time ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
So actually,
I got that in confidence.
So being bored is very good for everybody every now and again.
Yeah.
So yeah, let the guilt go. We've enough to be worrying about.
It's the Instagram comparisons as well. Yeah. Our parents were not looking at, you know, you want to gone off down the road to Lahinch or Tremor or whatever, I suppose, the sexy glamorous place to be going when we were kids. I first thought of the sea when I was seven, guys. Seven. I remember the smell of it going over the crest of a hill. There was relatives home from England and they said, let's go to the seaside. And I was like, oh my God, we're going to the seaside. I remember the smell of the sea before I saw it going over the crest of the hill down into Lahinch.
What, was it raw sewage that day? Or
Probably.
Yeah, but the smell is, you know,
I sewage in my childhood. Yeah, like it's kind of wild. I grew up in Tipperary. It's a bit landlocked. So, yeah. You know.
What a gorgeous childhood memory, though, that you remember the smell of the sea.
Do you not think that's quite sad? No.
You
remember it.
No, that's
than,
true.
Yeah,
I know. It was really cool. And
you were out digging up stones and everything.
The smell
you were
of
too
fish
busy.
And chips and whatnot. Yeah, no, it's really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I haven't said, like, my youngest is 10, and we're lucky enough in that she has one of these little kind of phone watch things.
Oh, cool.
Not the.
Not the alarm,
but like it's a wristwatch that's also a phone, but you can't, you know, it's very limited what you can do.
Yeah, we have
with
one
that.
Too.
Other than, you know,
it's basically a tracking device.
It's a tracking device, basically, and you can ring and say, come home. But like all the feckin' camps that we wasted money on or going on holidays, 9:30 this morning, she goes, yeah, my friend's up at the park at the monkey bars. Can I go? Bye. You know,
but that's amazing.
And that's the thing that they want to do actually most. The same way kids
hang
always
out.
Wanted to do is just hang out with
hang
their friends.
Out. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
that's
so
that's
let the guilt go.
I think the guilt is the opposite of that now. The guilt is not being able to afford the more opportunities to do that. I think that's been the thing for me is
that's
like
a shame. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Not being like having kids who are not quite there in terms of independence and things like that. And just going, I'd love that they would be able to go out and knock around. And it depends on the kid's personality as well and whether they feel, you know, and they have a big group of free range friends or whatever. So that's where I think, I presume it's guilt the whole way, right?
And so I have that too in a different way because we live in an apartment and he can't just wander out. We don't have a garden. His friends don't live locally. Whereas I lived in a cul-de-sac growing up.
Yeah.
So it's getting very modern now. But, you know, like I said, our best is good enough.
Yeah.
And they're fine. They're fine.
I believe you.
Finally, the two of ye are both going on mammy son trips.
Are we?
Yeah.
Are we going on the same one, Maya?
No, Susan is, but you're working, Maya, basically.
Oh, this has become now Maya's going to go. Oh, thanks a lot, Susan. I thought you were telling me not to be.
We're going on holiday together. What are we doing?
Yeah. What are you doing,
Maya?
Do
we get high vis vest?
What are you up to?
I am going to Electric Picnic.
Oh, nice.
But for the first time ever. Which people can't believe. I'm not a huge festival goer because I'm not brilliant in crowds. Like, to a point I am. I can do a gig, but after a while, I don't want to be in crowds for 3 days. But my friend Jan Brereton, who's an incredible poet, has curated the most amazing day on Friday called Wild Words. And it has, very impressive lineup. Donna Porter in conversation with Sinead Gleeson, Dylan Moran, Happy Monday Legends, Rowetta, Brendan Courtney talking fashion with Carolyn Franklin, my favourite author, Sarah Bean and Emer McLysett, the IT podcast live with Roisin Ingle, Dervla Meskel. There's lots of great people. Muireann O'Connell talking to Terry Christian. But I'm opening it with Jan. It's Jan's day. So at 2 o'clock on Friday, I'll be talking to Jan about her poetry, which is amazing, her life. And we're doing it. The theme is teenage kicks. So I know Friday, 2 o'clock, no one's going to be wrecked and hungover yet. But come and sit down and in the manifesto tent. And it's going to be
gorgeous.
And then
are you going to stay in a tent and do pills for the weekend?
I don't. Well, standard Friday for me anyway.
Yeah.
I left it so late to book. I'm going to gloss over that.
What is the battle for Dream Island?
Well, your guess is as good as mine, Sean. I wonder if there's any lone parent out there who'll go, oh God, you too, and we can do a support group. So it's some sort of, so the son is mad into animating and drawing and he's happy to be bored with a drawing pad. And he's fantastic at a great imagination. He has some friends who are really into it too. And one of them introduced him to this thing called Battle for Dream Island. It's a YouTube series. We had to check it and make sure it wasn't crazy or whatever. But yeah, it's like objects that are animated and then they have this whole narrative around them. So like his favourite thing at the moment is a plushie that is the shape of a rock. No word of a lie, but has got legs and arms. And he makes them himself out of felt now and everything.
What?
I know I'm setting him up, aren't I, for the new year in school. But anyway, he is mad for this thing, but there's a show for it. These things, these guys know how to make money, the creators, right? But we decided, like, he's been really good. We've been moving a lot in the last year. He's just super kid. And we just went some cheap Ryanair flights over to London and we're going over for a day. Turns out we're going to meet a cousin over there. It's going to be super. Anyway, we're going to have a little family thing and he and I are going to get the flight over and we're going to go to this Battle for Dream Island show in the their version of the point. You know the one near the circular.
Yes,
whatever.
Yeah.
See how long
two.
It's been since I've been on any sort of trip to London.
The O2 thing
so going to that.
I think it's the
O2, and then we're going to come back. But what's really nice about it is, you know, he's at that lovely age. And Sean, you might know more about this, about how long this will last. But I feel like it's a small window where he is grown up enough where we have really interesting conversations and I'm understanding how his mind works. We're talking about things he's obsessed with, like BFDI that I'd never heard of. And it's really important for me to kind of be interested, and in the way that I'm making him be interested in my bloody digging in the mud, right? That I think there's only a few years before he'll shut down and not tell me as much. Mm. But I'll know that these were things he were is interested in, and that I can say to him, what you're interested in, I know nothing about. But I'm really interested in the fact you're interested. It's just a really nice age. I'm really happy
trip
about it.
Long, we have that long. With trains and planes. I could tell you more about narrow gauge railways now than probably Michael Portillo.
That's a conversation. More than some departments in Ireland.
That's a conversation for another day. Thank you both very much. You have been listening to the botanist Maya Dunphy and the archaeologist Susan Daly there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.